Ennis Britton, this is Erin. How can I help you?
Hi, I'm in a bit of a spot with parents who are refusing to interact with us regarding their student.
Oh, okay. Well, let's back up. How did we get here?
So we've had a few meetings with her parents, and the student has been on an IEP for 3 years.
Okay.
We did a reevaluation this year and didn't see any large shifts in her needs through the evaluation. Her parents were angry, saying we weren't listening to them or considering their input.
Aye.
We were listening to their concerns, but just not agreeing with their conclusions.
Gotcha.
We've reached out to problem solve with them through IEP meetings, and they won't respond. They won't show up at meetings, and they won't return our calls. What should we do next?
Welcome to Season 2 of On the Call, Ennis Britton's Special Education Law Podcast. I'm Erin Wessendorf-Wortman.
And I am Jeremy Neff.
And we are ready to dig into this call. Jeremy, I love when the phone calls come in and they go, are we in trouble?
Yes.
We feel like we're in trouble. These parents have scared us.
One of these days, somebody's going to call in and they're just going to be like, you know what? I just had this amazing IEP meeting. We all sang Kumbaya at the end. And then we went out for, you know, wings afterwards.
They're not going to pay us to say everything sunshine, puppy dogs, and rainbows. And if they do, that's great. Or they'll say, don't bill me for this, but I'm letting you know it went well.
I have gotten those.
Yes.
Even occasionally, believe it or not, from parent attorneys calling to say, you know what, that thing we had a fight over a year ago, it's going really well. That feels nice.
That's a little heartwarming to be like, hey, thank you for recognizing that we are good people, right?
Yeah, but most of them are the call we just had.
Yeah, not the puppy sunshine and rainbows. I enjoy the other, but whatever. So we're talking predetermination now. And predetermination, not really defined in statute, right?
No.
This is more a creature of court case law and really a creature of what comes out of parental participation, right? Mm-hmm. So at least in terms of what the courts have said predetermination is, it is when members of an IEP team decide about a student's IEP, services, placement, all the things in advance of an IEP team meeting and or without that parent participation or input, right?
Right.
And it's about that parent piece of it if you are just not considering what the parent is bringing to the table.
It's a really big thing that's built on a relatively small thing. When you look at the federal regulations and whatever version your state has, parents are required IEP team members. And then it kind of builds from there. And, you know, normally in special education law, we don't get too hung up on procedural violations. We don't want them, but the focus is, does that result in the denial of FAPE? Well, basically, the courts have said, by definition, if a parent doesn't meaningfully participate in that role as a required member of the team, there is a FAPE violation.
If we don't allow them to meaningfully
Fair
participate.
Enough.
If
Thank
the parent
you.
Doesn't want to meaningfully participate, that's on them, at
right.
least the way that I would interpret
right.
that.
That's
but
accurate.
I think that's supportable by the regs because parents are the first person listed on the IEP team list, right? Natural, or biological, or adoptive parent. They are number one on that IEP team member list. And I think with that brings some meaning, at least what the courts have done is they have placed meaning on that from the regulators.
Yeah, and it's important enough that they're the only IEP team members where there's an elaborate process to basically fill in for them when they're not available beyond the scope of this episode. But, you know, we have surrogate parents for a reason. They're really critical.
And to make sure you give them notices, how many attempts to get them to the meeting, things of that nature. But if we're talking then, if parent participation is so necessary to this process and could result in, as a procedural violation, resulting in a denial of FAPE, what does parent participation even mean then, right? If it's not in the regs, we look to the courts. And courts have said it has to be meaningful, which again doesn't help me. I mean, I like definitions. I like to open it and say, what does it mean? And then when I have to do more digging, it makes me mad.
Yeah, and I don't even think we have great analogies on this one either. They just kind of explicitly state it. So, it comes down to that concept of, you know, an open mind. And there are many court cases that have taken a swing at the, you know, coming to the meeting with an open mind does not mean that you have a blank mind. And that's the simple formulation I've walked away from all those decisions with. I know you've pulled some specific language for us here.
I have, at least in terms of cases that have cited this. And they've come from all over. You have Maryland, you have the Fourth Circuit, you have the Sixth Circuit. I mean, everyone has said, listen, Open mind does not mean blank mind. So we don't have to show up to an IEP meeting with a blank IEP form. We can have the IEP more or less fully drafted. Again, note draft, so long as we are coming in ready to make changes as needed based on the parent input, the parent documentation, the parent statements, and the discussion that happens at that IEP team meeting. And so making sure we're sitting down and really considering the suggestions, not paying it lip service, but actually saying, okay, well, mom and dad, you have a question about this goal. You think, look, just for instance, it's a math goal and we are looking at, I don't know, addition and subtraction, and you think it's more necessary to work on money.
Right.
I mean, you could probably incorporate the two into a beautiful little math goal on, you know, money with addition and subtraction, unless the student doesn't understand the value of coins, but making sure you're documenting that conversation and actually engaging in the discussion with the parents over why their ideas may or may not work.
Yeah, this is sort of like for the educators out there, especially the elementary educators that might be listening to this or former elementary. It's that distinction where a kid goes sometime, ideally in preschool, maybe in kindergarten or so, they go from parallel play to truly meaningful interacting with a peer play. So we can't have parallel play in IEP meetings where it's just like we take turns. We say our thing. When I say we represent schools. The school folks say their thing. The parents say their thing. The school folks say their thing. No, it should be a meaningful back and forth. And in fact, there are a handful of cases out there where the court doesn't just say it's okay to have some ideas down in writing. They say, gosh, you didn't give the parents enough in advance for them to come prepared and to meaningfully participate. So being too open-minded about it could actually, in and of itself, deny a parent meaningful participation.
Oh, I love this. You know, the predetermination episode on the pod is now also catch 22. Don't do too much where you've made up your mind, but don't do too little to deny them parent participation.
It's mushy, like you said.
Find the happy medium.
Yeah.
How delightful. We're going to be employed forever.
Forever.
But I do love at least a quote that came out of a Sixth Circuit decision in 2006. Now, Sixth Circuit covers Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee, right? And we're in Ohio. So I always look to Sixth Circuit, other places when it's important to. But they have said very clearly in this NAC versus Orange City School District case, and I quote because I love it, predetermination is not synonymous with preparation.
Yep.
So we can prepare. And I think preparing, at least school people, tend to really love preparing and having the draft and making sure we're communicating all of that home. We just have to make clear to parents when we're doing that our preparation does not mean we will not consider what they're bringing to the table. And so that's when to bring in the recent case we're going to talk about. It is a case out of Baltimore, Maryland. So it's CK versus Baltimore City Board of Commissioners, came out of the U.S. District Court of Maryland. So it got up to a federal court level in, I believe, what's that, May of 23. And I think what I found, at least similar to a lot of situations that you and I may face, is in this case, this kiddo had been a private school student since first grade. We were talking about 11th grade now. So for all real considerations, the parents had probably predetermined on their own they were not coming back to the public school, right? But they're allowed to do that.
Sure.
And I think that's one where, at least as a minor riff on this case, sometimes we get school officials who are like, well, if I'm not allowed to predetermine, they can't predetermine. Well, that's not how this works, right? And so in this case, right, kiddo has been at a private school. It was a private school for students with disabilities, specifically learning disabilities. He had been there, he or she, I don't even know that I have the gender of the student. Doesn't matter. Student had been there for a number of years. So prior to the annual meeting, school got together. They are responsible for drafting the annual IEP and sending it home because they're responsible as district of residence to offer FAPE annually, right? And then when the child was enrolled in a private school, had to offer, I think they called it a PEP, like a personalized education plan within Maryland.
Yeah, see your state regulations, right?
There you go. I just remember the acronym was PEP and it made me laugh. But prior to the annual meeting, sends a draft home. Not clear if it was watermarked or anything indicated draft. But the IEP did indicate that the general education teacher was the primary provider of supplementary aids and services, also indicated what the proposed placement would be within a clearly general education school setting. Parents were mad, clearly, show up to the IEP meeting and ask point blank, I mean, clearly they're educated, what have you predetermined, right? Have you predetermined everything that's going to happen here? district said exactly what they were supposed to, right? Lovingly wonder what they were doing is just saying, hey, no, this was just our draft based on the identified needs in an evaluation. We think that we can appropriately support the kid in this fashion, and here's how we would propose it. And so it is just a draft. We are happy to amend this. This is a draft form, and it can be changed. Right.
But did they amend it?
They didn't.
No.
After a discussion, they engaged in the discussion. It appears that it was genuine. It was not parallel play. It was, what is that phrase?
I was a high school social studies teacher. I don't know that stuff. To the point they even invited the private school folks,
they did.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a pretty good indication. You haven't ruled it out. Why else are they there?
Correct. And so they were there, but then the parents even said, look, listen, you know, it's so predetermined. You use the drop-down menus from this IEP program just to pick it. You weren't even doing any real thought. You were so predetermined. You just chose it. The district said, it's a drop-down menu. We can pick a different option from the drop-down menu based on this discussion. So just because this is all she wrote, folks, doesn't mean that we can't change it within there. And so parent rejected the IEP, re-enrolled in private school, and clearly then they sought funding for tuition and services. You know, I wonder, again, we don't operate in Maryland, right? So I wonder what was happening in Maryland at this time, because the kid had been in private school since first grade. The district was not paying for, that I could tell, private school the entire time until now the parent was asking for it. So it goes to due process. We have a 13-day due process hearing. That's a lot of days.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at going into, what, a third week? Because if we only do 5 days a week, that is a lot of hearing. Hearing officer at that point in Maryland said, nope, no predetermination, no procedural violations, no denial of FAPE. District had an appropriate IEP. Great. So they didn't even have to go whether the placement outside was appropriate. They said the district offered FAPE. So at that point, clearly parents are mad. Parents go to this district court in Maryland, who then agreed with the IHO. And I always love when courts are then having to delve into the weirdness of drop-down menus.
Well, because this is the one, there have been a few of these talking about drop-down menus. Part of the challenge the school had is if they didn't select an item in a drop-down menu, they couldn't complete the form, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, you know, technology getting a little bit in the way. But the court and the hearing officer were willing to entertain that and say, okay, yeah, we get it.
And the reason was, is because they were willing to engage in the conversation at the table. So they had made clear at the table, which then the way that we know they made it clear is it probably made it to a prior written notice that this was just a draft. We were open to change based on the discussion that they were there. And so it's clear by inviting the private placement, it's clear by the prior written notice, we engaged and discussed what the parents brought. We considered it. We just didn't have to agree with it.
And it's hard to get into the mind of the hearing officer and then the judge reviewing that. I got to think, though, the fact that the child had been privately placed by the parents all those years, yes, the parents are allowed to predetermine, but that doesn't mean we can't point to that predetermination and say, hey, look, we tried to engage and, you know, they kind of disengaged, but here are all the opportunities we provided. That's still good evidence for us.
Correct.
And for this district.
Well, and it's not one in this case where you have a parent who's refusing to engage in the IEP meeting process, right? This is a parent who comes, they're clearly ready to engage and they want to have it changed. Clearly, at least reading the decision, they want payment, right? But I do think what saved the district in this case, if we shift over into practical tips and what can we learn from these moments, to me, the only reason, now we can bring in people all of the time in a due process hearing to talk about what was discussed, but the best evidence of what was discussed at a meeting is that prior written notice. And you and I have seen so many of those. Maybe that's a whole topic for another pod. But do you like my shortening of podcast a pod?
I'm just going to go with cast. Sort of like Topher Grace, you know, calls himself Topher instead of Chris.
No.
Yeah.
No, you're not going to call it the cast? No,
no.
It's a pod.
All right.
It's normal lingo. I mean, I know that you're, you know,
I don't know
not hip
things.
To the wise anymore, but it's called a pod.
All right.
And that's probably aging me as well. So it's fine. But when looking at a prior written notice, we've seen ones where it's like, what was the purpose? Annual IEP meeting. What did you do? Discuss the draft IEP. All agreed upon it. Any other options considered? Not having an IEP, but that would be contrary to law. And then that's the whole prior written. And it doesn't do anything.
Right.
Right. And so having that documented discussion, not verbatim, but at least noting the areas where, oh, hey, parent came with this concern about the math goal or how many minutes were provided or where it was. This was the district's response. This was the change that was made or the refusal to make that change. All of those things are really key to documenting the conversation, to put parents on notice of what happened, yes, but also to really capture what happened in that meeting if in the event you have to show what happened in that meeting later. I don't know what I had for dinner last Tuesday, let alone what maybe happened 9 months ago at a meeting that I attended, right? And so having that documentation of what that was really important.
Anything that's contemporaneous to the decision, it just lends so much credibility to the testimony that comes later. Because you'll still need that testimony, but having something, even if it's somebody that just keeps their own personal notes and they're able to say when they testify, you know, what did you do to prepare for this? I reviewed my personal notes. You know, that can be helpful. Just it lends credibility, especially schools are never the good guys, right? Yeah. We're the big institution in these hearings. So it really builds up that credibility.
But at least to save if, you know, you're in a district and you go, oh, I have some prior writtens that might not be up to snuff. It doesn't mean you lose a case on the other side of it, right? So failure to really prove and show in documentation the consideration of parent input isn't enough to get us, well, clearly you predetermined because your prior written notices aren't there. That's not it. Courts then just make people work harder, right? You have to work harder to show predetermination or to then work harder to show that it didn't happen, right? And so in looking at an IEP, I love that parents are not passive observers. So if we can show in meetings where parents are engaged and you're at least trying to engage them. So at least I've been in IEP meetings where parents are, no questions, no questions, no questions. And a district will ask after every goal when you get done and after the sections on services and after the section on placements and no questions, no questions, no questions. But then they disagree with maybe some bigger ticket items at the end. Having that element to just push back as a district, say, okay, hold on, we didn't get anything the rest of the meeting. Can you help us understand where maybe you disagree or why you say that right now? Not being afraid to step into that conflict, right, or to that uneasiness, I think is really key to a lot of ensuring that predetermination and then sort of that really quick tangential item of parent participation happens.
Well, and documenting that, right? It feels really self-serving and maybe a little weird, but in that prior written notice, going through and saying, this part of the IEP was discussed. Parents were asked if they had any questions. They said no. And repeating that every single time it happened in the meeting, that's a way to capture that. And especially in the world of virtual meetings where I feel like it's even more common for folks not to engage. They might have their camera off and be muted. And, hey, I see you're muted. I see your camera's off. Do you have any questions? And just documenting that. Document that their camera's off and that they're muted. Sure.
But how do you build that in if we want to ensure that we're not predetermining and we want to make clear to the parents we're not predetermining? How do we best build that out? Right? I think it's tough.
Yeah. Well, I think one is to actively go into a meeting looking for ways to incorporate ideas, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's often a lot of ways to get to a particular goal, or maybe there's multiple ways you could prompt a child to do something. And if the parents say, hey, you know, what I say at home when we're stuck on this is fill in the blank, whatever their phrase is. If it's a good enough phrase, even if you had a different idea coming to the meeting, use theirs. Look for those opportunities and then document those opportunities. When I'm called into a meeting, I'll keep a separate set of notes where I'll have like it's the prior written notice section, mm-hmm. and I'll just capture every time the parents suggested something their advocate or attorney did, I'll capture it there. So that way we can capture, even if it's denied, at least it shows we were considering it when we document that was something discussed.
Helps flag you for the discussion. It's also though, when you send home that IEP draft or you send home that ETR draft, making sure if it is in writing that maybe a document goes on top of it, or if it's via email. I don't know. Some programs allow you to watermark these things to, you know, heck and back, draft, draft, draft. But then putting in that communication to the parent that, listen, this is a draft. This is going to be used for purposes of discussion and development of the final IEP. This is not the final one. And as much as we can just smack parents with that, I think it's helpful if we are ever faced with a claim of predetermination, to say, hold up, wait a minute, we've made it clear this is just an initial discussion point. This allowed us to be prepared to come to the meeting, to give parents enough information to allow them to meaningfully participate at this meeting, and then we were going to sort of jump off from there to see if changes were made.
And that's boilerplate you use again and again and again every time you send one of those. And I know, again, it can feel self-serving. If it doesn't, you're probably not being obvious enough. Think back to the caller where this parent was using the phrase, you know, did you predetermine this, right? Then, I mean, parents and their advocates will use those phrases. Schools should use it too to make it really clear.
We're considering all of the options. So if we're circling back to that phone call and really looking at, you know, are we in trouble? I mean, not giving legal advice on a pod, but, you know, I do think we got to look at that entire situation. Everything is very fact specific. But the more that we can go above and beyond to, from the outset and sending documents home, make it clear it's a draft, opening a meeting to say, we have sent this home. Did you receive the draft? This is just our opening. It is that rote every time conversation. This is just a draft. We're using this for our discussion and for your input, and being able to document that on the other side and making sure that if a parent is bringing to us options that we have never considered before, we don't have a quick, nah, we're not doing that. It could be you continue your meeting to have that appropriate consideration of whatever is brought.
Thank you for tuning in to On the Call. If you have found value in our discussion and think your educator colleagues would as well, please share this podcast through text, word of mouth, staff meetings, chats in the teacher's lounge. Your support is what drives this podcast.
We work to bring real-life situations and practical tips to each episode. If you have a topic you would like to suggest or want to share your thoughts, please connect with us on social media or email us at podcast@ennisbritton.com.
A quick note, this podcast is intended to be used for general information only and is not legal advice. If you have a specific question, please consult an attorney.
We are looking forward to being on the call with you again soon.